Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. We've dressed over 20,000 wedding parties, and most of our business comes from referrals. Why? Because we make it so easy. Tight timeline? No problem. Groomsmen scattered all over? We got you. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Come see me at Nick's Menswear, and let's make this the easiest win for your wedding planning. Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
We're up there, and, like, here are the people on the panel, so I'm, like, taking pot shots at Brian Braum. Because, like, that's what he came to Buffalo for.
It's Mike Shope.
You literally told EJ Manuel to his face that he sucked.
And the Bulldog.
I was proud of you, because I just...
I feel like that's what you're there for.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I know. I couldn't, though. No. I couldn't.
I'm better than you.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I don't disagree with him about that last point. I wouldn't say that if he were here, though. You know, that's just between us. For one thing about Bulldog, he is not, I'm pretty sure, doing what I was doing 15 seconds ago, which was, I mean, I think the operative word is scouring the waiver wire for just like a dart throw, block, pickup, week 17. I don't know. Do I really need to pick up Kevontae Turpin? Is that the life I'm living? It's the holidays. Connor Rogers with me on the Wester Hotline from NBC and SNY and PFF. And Connor, I'm sorry your boy's not here.
That's all good, Mike. You'll do. Listen, you're fine. I'm still happy to be here.
I'll do. Thank you. I appreciate that very much. I'm always grateful for your time, especially during the holidays on a Friday. So thanks a lot. What exactly... do you do in the fantasy space? I know that's a part of your portfolio.
So I host Matthew Berry's fantasy show at NBC, which is 6 days a week. I am there Monday to Friday. On Sunday, I am with the Jets pre- and post-game, so I don't do fantasy football pre-game. But Monday to Friday, you name it, waivers, previews, best bets, we got it all covered. So it's a long, long but very, very rewarding year.
Buddy, I mean, I know. I'm hosting ADP Chasing now and my Deep End podcast, and it's like I'm so tired. It's so embarrassing to say out loud, but I'm just exhausted. You know what? We won't stay on fantasy, but as much as I'd like to. What's tricky this week, on top of the fact that the schedule is so splintered, like, you know, C.J. Stroud would have been iffy on Wednesday. Russell Wilson, maybe. These are guys you probably don't want to start, but it's the finals, and you've got to last night's game, either of those guys. Now we're getting to the weekend, and Connor, no Jalen Hurts, maybe no Anthony Richardson. This is tough right here. I might there might be teams out there who end up at Cooper Rush.
Mike, it's awful. Matthew said it best when we taped our show this morning today because of all the holiday chaos. He said this might be the worst championship week of all time when you factor in the injuries, the schedule because of the Christmas games and how it started, how bad Thursday Night Football was. And in our NBC show league, the championship, one of the guys in it, because it's a super flex league, which I'm personally not a fan of, but hey, when you're not the commissioner, you don't make the rules. One of the guys in the championship is starting Drake May and Cooper Rush as the super flex, and he's in the championship. That's the point we're at in week 17 right now.
Yeah. At the point where, like, Bo Nix is obvious.
Yeah. You'd love Bo Nix against the Bengals. Sure.
You'd love Bo Nix. You might even like Mason Rudolph this week.
Yeah, you could be starting Michael Penix. You could be starting Mason Rudolph. We are in the barren wasteland at quarterback.
Wow.
Definitely at tight end. And then, you know, depending on your luck or unluckiness, you'll see how running back and wide receiver goes.
Right. Tight end, we're used to this, but not.
It's a disaster every year. And then you get excited. Like Kyle Pitts comes along and you're like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And then 3 years later, you're like, oh, man, this isn't awesome at all. We're back to square one.
I'm at, well, 2 weeks ago, I'm at, well, you know, I know Kyle Pitts is a trap, so I'll just, oh, this is the smart play. I'll just play Brenton Strange instead last week.
Yep.
And it's two catches. Ferguson is actually set up nicely here, I think, with Lamb out. So, Connor, to the point here, where does Aaron Rodgers fit into all of this for week 17 at Buffalo?
Well, the good news is he's milestone chasing, right? Which means he's going to throw, and that's what they've been doing in the red area a lot. You know, much to the chagrin, I think, of probably the running backs and even Garrett Wilson at times, but that's how it is for the Jets when they get down there. The 500 touchdown is on the line. It's no secret, if you just turn on the tape, that Rodgers is looking for Devontae Adams, so they get that 500 touchdown together. And, you know, now Rodgers, this is kind of an interesting scenario because he's not only been really banged up all year, which is less than shocking for a quarterback in his 40s coming off an Achilles, but it felt like in, you know, about three quarters through the season, he was moving well again, he got healthy again, and then he took a really, really rough hit last week where now it's out in the open. He's got a real knee injury, but he's going to play through it. He's been able to practice a little bit this week. Devontae Adams returned to practice actually today. He was dealing with a hip injury. He didn't practice at all Wednesday and Thursday. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I don't know if the Jets defense, especially with Sauce Gardner and Quinnen Williams, both questionable, and I would lean those questionables closer to doubtful than probable. If those guys don't play, I don't see how the defense is going to have any answer for the Bills' offense, which means Rodgers and company will be passing and chasing a lot of points.
The Bills' implied total in this game is 28 at home in December. Yeah. Okay. 28-18. Yeah, 10-46.
Yeah, I'd probably play that. I guess the only thing you fear is the clock, because the Jets' run defense without Quinnen Williams is, in my opinion, uncompetitive at times. And the Bills might go into this game and go, why are we going to drop back our MVP quarterback this close to the playoffs a million times? Let's just get all three of our running backs involved. We got a good offensive line. So then you go up against the running clock. It is Buffalo in December, so maybe the kicking game isn't great on both sides, as we've seen. That's probably why it could be tricky, but I still would lean at least a push of 28.
Okay, that's interesting. It's going to be in the 50s for this game, so it's not it's not frigid. And, Connor, I wonder about the MVP thing with Allen now. Like, that's gotten close. They're a 10-point favorite, and through the years, like, he's played even in the week 18 or the last game, including a game against the Jets, I believe, at home, where he started the game, and normally these days teams would not even risk that. He's got the longest going streak of starts for a quarterback. I'd expect him to play next week, at least start the game next week in New England, even if they don't need it. And I wonder just if, you know the Allen profile, right? Like, He's gotten to this point, so much of his reputation and his whole thing, his brand, is like the spectacular. And I don't know, like, I think everything you said is logical about what could happen Sunday, anytime it's a 10-point favorite. But if that were to happen, I bet Allen would have a lot to do with it.
I don't think you're wrong at all. I think, you know, there's also the argument, I'm sitting here going running clock, run game. Well, I mean, who's to say he can't fall into the end zone two times on his own
right.
in that run game, right? I mean, he doesn't have to drop back to run up his numbers. He could easily come out of this game with one passing touchdown on, you know, we'll call it, say, 25 dropbacks or so. And then he could honestly fall into the end zone twice very easily with his running threat at the red zone. And I don't think the Jets are very good against running quarterbacks, as we saw not only the first game against Buffalo, but really kind of been a theme this year with a lot of various quarterbacks. So, yeah, that's a good point. This MVP conversation has grown larger than life, and it's very entertaining. I mean, I don't really have a hard stance on it because I can't remember a year where two guys were having this much of a unicorn season. I guess it's crazy to even say that because Lamar and Allen have done this for a while now, but even for them, it's just you could give this award to either guy and go, yeah, that checks out with what they've done. But now we need to let the season play out for it to be decided, and that kind of goes full circle to your point here, Mike, that might play into it.
Right on. Connor Rogers, my guest, NBC Sports. Mike Chopier, Bulldog, is off today. Thanks for listening. So what is your version, Connor, of this, like, the script of this Jets season? What went wrong other than, you know, most things?
Interestingly enough, it was always something different, which is fascinating to me. And the Jets are a talented enough team that they have no business picking in the top eight of the draft. So obviously a lot of things had to go wrong for them to be in this spot. I didn't pick them to win the division because I was always extremely skeptical of the coaching. And I think that came to fruition earlier than even they expected. But it wasn't just the coaching. I was skeptical of the coaching and thought, man, they could still be in play for a wild card spot because they just have a lot of talent. And what happened is they lost a lot of one-score games throughout most of the season. A handful of them were strictly on the special teams. I mean, you got to make your kicks. They lose strictly to Denver. They lost for a lot of reasons against Denver, but they still had the chance to win the game with a walk-off field goal. They missed that. They missed kicks against the Bills when the AFC East, you know, first-place spot was on the line. And then a lot of things. The defense could really never close out a game when the ball got back to the other team in a 2 or 3 minute situation. And then Rodgers hasn't been able to pull off game-winning drives like he was brought here to do. You look at the Minnesota game. That's a really good Minnesota team. The Jets had them on the ropes in London. They actually were one of the best defenses this year, I think, against Kevin O'Connell's offense, especially in the second half. Darnold had no answers, and Rodgers missed a wide-open Garrett Wilson on a double move that would have been a game-ending touchdown, essentially. Forget the interception on the Mike Williams play. Everybody talks about that, but that play would have never happened if he just hit Garrett Wilson in stride. So they had multiple things go wrong on every single unit, special teams, offense, defense, and obviously the coaching really, really failed them. They haven't been a disciplined team. They haven't found their identity on offense, although they've scored a lot of points on offense over the second half of the season. But the defense hasn't been healthy, and it honestly hasn't been very good, and they didn't recover from the transitions on the defensive line. They lost three different guys, four different guys on that defensive line. The guys they brought in and elevated roles haven't been any good, so it's, you know, it's kind of when it rains, it pours, and that's how you end up as a, you know, 4-win team.
The season was close to, well, it was in trouble at the deadline when they made the Adams trade, but I defended them for making that move. You know, you've already bet big on this season. It's not over, and maybe he ends up being a huge difference maker. Would you have, like, did you think when they did that, that was worth doing?
I did. I thought that they had a problem at number two wide receiver. Lazard was not the answer in that area, and he had a lot of drops, and you knew this would free up Garrett Wilson. And the ironic thing, if you told somebody, you just threw away the wins-loss record, you said, hey, the Jets are going to get Devontae Adams, and in 9 games, he's going to have 56 catches for over 700 yards and 6 touchdowns. And you'd go, okay, that sounds pretty good.
Deal.
I mean, when you spread that across a full season, that's the number one wide receiver in the NFL. So in a nutshell, that move was fine. But they weren't able to plug up all their other issues, and that ultimately just wasn't it. You couldn't outscore everybody, you know. So adding Adams, I agreed with you. I think that was the right idea in a nutshell, but they didn't do everything else that they needed to do.
Is Rodgers back next year?
I'd say no.
Okay.
I would say the weird caveat with this one is that they have to hire a GM and head coach, and you would think in theory those guys get to be a part of that decision. But I think ownership is out on this experiment. I think reading through the lines, I don't really get the sense that Rodgers loves being here right now, although I think he doesn't really have a lot of choices, and he's a very aware guy. I think he looks around and goes, man, like I'm not going to have a lot of opportunities around the league next year because I'm of my age and my play. So I would put it at about a 10% chance he's back, and I feel like I'm even high-barring that because you just never know who they're going to hire and how they're going to feel and if they want that. They want him here for a transition year while they get their guy under center. This quarterback class is not very good for the draft where the Jets won't be in position to pick one. So I would still call it a pretty low chance. So I'd call it 10%, and I think I'm really on the high end there.
Interesting. I feel like there might be an argument that like it's gotten a little bit better than the off-the-rails first half of the season and all the drama. Like, they're not winning, but we'll see what happens Sunday. It'll be a pretty good win. It seems like it's gotten a lot better. I keep hearing about, speaking of the Jets, Sam Darnold as, okay, well, where does he go next year? And I don't know, like, why wouldn't it be Minnesota necessarily? But would Tennessee, it's not a great quarterback draft, apparently. Tennessee, Raiders, some of those teams maybe would pay up for Darnold. And you're not saying this, that Rodgers wouldn't be a consideration for those same teams, but I don't know. Like, to me, there might still be a chance that somebody would want him.
There definitely is, because the demand, just the supply never meets the demands around the league for adequate quarterback play.
Right.
That's what Rodgers is right now. He's just adequate. Like, he's never going to put you over the top. Rodgers' biggest problem, and everyone knows this, is that he's not good enough anymore that you want to sign up for everything else that comes with him. And when things went really wrong with this team, when they were still in contention in the middle of the season, it just felt like he didn't have a lot of the answers and didn't make things better. And I think when you look at your quarterback, your leader of the organization, that's the guy that you want to have those answers besides the coaching staff. And I think it's led to some frustration from some of the skill guys on the team not named Davante Adams across the board, including Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall. And those guys carry themselves the right way and they say all the right things, but I think that it just hasn't played out the way that everybody hoped for. And I think at the end of the day, the supply is just so low that could I see a Rodgers, you know, a plan B or C scenario for the team that doesn't get Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders and he's a one-year stopgap and people need to try to keep their jobs? Yeah, that wouldn't shock me at all.
Would the Giants ever happen?
that's the funniest one, right?
Yes.
Because, like, the who's going to be – is Brian Daboll still there? Brian Daboll and Aaron Rodgers might be the most explosive sideline
yes.
I've ever seen in the NFL.
Love it.
So that's a disaster waiting to happen. But then also, you know, do they get that opportunity? Does he get that opportunity? And then are they going to pick number one? It's looking like right now they will be. And will they take a quarterback? And if they do, they won't want Rodgers there for that. But it's not out of the range of outcomes, let me say that.
Mm-hmm. Before I let you go, Connor, what's your – big picture view on the AFC playoffs here going in? The Bills know now that they won't get the one. They're the only team to have beaten Kansas City for much of the season. I'd say they look better than Kansas City, but it's not going to happen. How big of a factor is that for you?
I don't think it's huge. I think the Bills needed that win because I think it gave them the confidence. Not that they're not a confident team. They know they're a Super Bowl contender, but now they beat Kansas City this year. So it's like, okay, we beat these guys already. So I don't worry about the Bills not having the number one seed. Obviously, it makes your path a little bit more difficult, potentially, depending how the seeding plays out. I think at the end of the day, if you're Buffalo, you know, whether it's in Buffalo, whether it's Kansas City, whether it's on Mars, you're going to have to get through Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, and that's how it goes. And they're now mentally equipped for that. They still have to have the physical results. But this is a fascinating field, and I'll tell you right now, from an entertainment perspective, I am rooting heavily for the Cincinnati Bengals to find a way in here, because I think Joe Burrow is a top five player in the NFL just to turn the TV on and watch. And I don't think that Bengals defense would stand a chance in the playoffs, but just seeing Burrow try to answer every single drive, if we have an AFC playoff seeding that's Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, that's pretty unbelievable to me. So that's a scenario that I'm keeping my eye on. And just the fact that, you know, it's the AFC is kind of the MVP. You have to go through the MVP race to get to the Super Bowl. I think it's just, to me, wildly more impressive. And I know Detroit's had a good year, but they're running out of players on defense. Minnesota finds a way to win every week, but I don't know if they're a real Super Bowl championship contender. I guess we'll see how far coaching can take them. So I think the AFC race is specifically special.
Yeah, I would say I can't speak for all the fans here, but the Bengals are a little scary given what's happened in the past. The Bills have kind of, they've beaten everybody, including Kansas City. 4 years in a row, they've beaten Kansas City in the regular season, Baltimore in the playoffs. But the Bengals, you don't have at least that one piece where you've seen the Bills win the game against Cincinnati. There was the Hamlin game, the playoff loss, another one last year. So, yeah, for me, and we've talked about this all the time, of the possibilities at the 7 seed, they're the one that I think would be the most concerning. So, entertainment-wise, though, right with you. Like, yeah, of course.
Oh, it'll be amazing. Yeah, it would be amazing to watch.
Thank you, Connor, as always, for your time. Happy New Year, and we'll talk again soon, I hope.
Happy New Year, Mike. Thanks for having me, man. Always a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure. Thanks. Appreciate that. Connor Rogers, SNY, PFF, NBC, all the letters. And knows his fantasy. Mark Andrews of the Ravens has been talking about tight end like we did for a minute. You know, one guy that's been a headache. Season started, they played Kansas City, and he might have had one or two catches, and then he had a zero against the Bills. Like, what happened to Mark Andrews? Isn't playing as many snaps. I looked today, 10 touchdowns. Fourth in the league, Andrews. So, not a comfortable start. This week's already taken care of, and he did score on Wednesday. But a lot of angst about him this year. Same number of touchdowns as Justin Jefferson, I believe, this year so far, Andrews. If you're in your fantasy finals and you've got an issue, I'm here, 803-0550. Sal at 5, Paul and the pregame show at 6. It is Football Friday on WGR. I'll be back in a snap. It's brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
It's a division game, and it's at home, and these are the games you love playing in, right? And in December, and it's a fun opportunity for us to go out, play our best football, and improve on the areas we need to improve on. And this is a team that, as you mentioned, they're out of the playoffs, eliminated from the playoffs, and they've been playing and managing a rather aggressive game in terms of going for it on fourth downs, faking punts, so on and so forth. So they'll be wide open, and that's the type of game we expect.
Sean McDermott this morning on WGR. The Bills, one win away from being the AFC 2-seed.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January. The hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report. And meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Into the playoffs for the third year in a row. The Barnes Firm injury report is brought to you by, right, the Barnes Firm. Car crash? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Sal will join me at 5 to get into the details here. Four players listed as questionable. The two safeties, DeMar Hamlin, Taylor Rapp. Also Cam Lewis in the secondary. And then Curtis Samuel. A lot of other names, starting with Josh Allen. They list them alphabetically, so more ways than one, starting with Josh Allen, the most important, listed on the report, but have been practicing in full, in his case, all week, and most players' cases all week as well. Again, Sal with more on that coming up. Home game for the Bills, the final home game of the season. By the way, lines are open at 803-0550 if you want to chat. This game, playoff picture, motivation here in the coming two games. The MVP race, all of it. It's a really fun time to be talking football. Chance to finish undefeated at home for the season, the Bills. The three losses, all on the road. Baltimore, Houston, and Los Angeles. So this would be, if they do it, if they beat the Jets, the third time in franchise history, maybe all time or at least Super Bowl era, I think all time. The other two seasons they went undefeated at home in were 1988 and 1990, which if you are around my age, those seasons were both, I mean, I can say this, I think after 3 to 3.5 decades, unforgettable. 88 was so memorable. I was 16 and the Bills had you know, in my lifetime, almost never been good. And then 88 happens, and they blew away the division. Undefeated at home. Both of those seasons as well, they went undefeated at home through the playoffs. 88, they won a home playoff game against Houston. And 90, they won two. Dolphins and famously the Raiders that year. So both of those seasons were undefeated at home seasons, and then extending that into the postseason, which you'd love to have. I mean, that's going to mean everything happen here this year if the Bills go ahead and beat the Jets first. 88, it was awesome because they'd really almost never been good. The 80-81 teams were good, and then they went down to the bottom. Kelly in 86, Thurman Thomas in 88, Bruce Andre, everybody's here now. And that team did win with defense, but on to the AFC Championship, crushing loss there, really fun year. Then 90 was like the peak. Lost in the playoffs in 89. 89 was a trying season for them. Then 90, they were kind of perfect. Maybe not defensively, but the no huddle, the K-gun, all of it just took off in 1990. They passed that late season test at Giants Stadium to beat the Giants on the Saturday. Kelly gets hurt. They go on to the playoffs. The incredible wins against Miami and then the Raider blowout. I'm pretty sure I will never forget those two Bills seasons. They have not gone undefeated at home since. So here's to that changing on Sunday. By the way, speaking of the 90 Bills, did you hear last night when... why did this happen? Was there a play in the game? The James Harrison touchdown return for Pittsburgh against Arizona in the Super Bowl came up, and they showed a clip from that play, which was both one of the most amazing plays in football history, and, you know, there was a block in the back, pretty blatant, but that's football for you. And I think maybe it was Kirk Herbstreit, excuse me, saying it first. Something about like one of the greatest games or his favorite Super Bowl, something like that. I kind of tune him out. But I did catch Al Michaels right after saying that it was his favorite game to broadcast. Did you hear that? Al Michaels said that about Pittsburgh, Arizona. And immediately I thought of Super Bowl 25, which was, I guess I could have gotten out a tale of the tape here called Nick Bakay, but... wasn't that a better game than Pittsburgh, Arizona? This is my anti-Arizona bias showing. Because what were they doing in the Super Bowl? The Cardinals. I guess somebody would have said that about the Bills in 1990. But no turnovers. I mean, dramatic finish. Pittsburgh, Arizona had the dramatic finish a couple of times over with the Larry Fitzgerald touchdown for Arizona late. This Cardinals bias, like... some of the teams are the real teams, like the teams that go to and win Super Bowls, and some are not. And I remember being so confident that Pittsburgh would just wipe the floor with Arizona, and that did not happen. So the Fitzgerald touchdown, and then you had the incredible Santonio Holmes catch for Pittsburgh to win it. I'm not saying it's a bad choice. I mean, Al's been around 50 years. I mean, he's got a lot to pick from. But I wasn't offended. It caught my ear immediately when he said that was his, I think he said favorite, but the best game, either his favorite or the best game he's had. And I mean, there are lots of regular season games. I think of him, you know, he's my guy. Like I think of Monday Night Football games in the 80s and 90s, Kansas City, Denver back and forth late. It's always subjective, of course, like the best games. But I don't know. The Bills lost it, but I've always, you know, as a fan, taken some pride in that game was really special. Right from Whitney Houston, you know, to the game itself, where the game gets so much credit for the so-called chess match between what the Giants did to the Bills offense, and still the Bills get the Thurman run to start the fourth quarter, and they're up, and of course, I mean... have a chance to win it. Just a classic. And I guess I just don't think of Pittsburgh, Arizona as a classic, probably because Arizona was in the game. Like, just, I don't know. I'm not exactly making the most convincing argument. I'm admitting my own problem with it, which is not exactly a good problem. It's the Cardinals. Change the Cardinals to the Cowboys, and I'm fine. Anyway, I thought it was interesting that Al said that. Al, by the way, I call him that. I call him Al since we talk. 803-0550 is the number. Bulldog has texted in his picks. We will get to that next hour. I know you can't wait. The Sabres home for Chicago tonight, 6 o'clock pregame. Paul will join me then, and Sal will be on. I'm going out of order, but at 5. MVP is back in the air with what happened on Christmas Day with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. This is good now because maybe Josh Allen will have a tremendous game against the Jets and push that race the other way. And then if the Bills win the game, he sits for all of or most of next week, I would think. I'm going to go to Foxborough, drive the 7 hours, and watch Trubisky for most of that game next Sunday. My guess would be Allen starts, then comes out like he's done other times in that spot. And MVP voters would not hold that against Allen. I mean, that's just sort of the circumstances. If he doesn't play, I doubt it affects him negatively in that race. You could have a Jackson game next week against the Browns. And Sal and I, well, I was texting Sal like crazy this morning about week 18 schedule possibilities. Because I kind of like Cincinnati-Pittsburgh as a Saturday game. I think that's interesting, especially if the Bengals are still in it. I know how the league would not want to give a team an extra advantage by giving them information that they'll need, that they'll want about another team losing or winning previously in the schedule. And that would, if Pittsburgh went to Saturday and the Ravens were still on Sunday, that could be that. Like, because the Ravens would clinch the AFC North with a Pittsburgh loss to the Bengals. But you also have which games are the most interesting? And they're going to have to pick three island games, right? Two on Saturday and one on Sunday night. And there's also a chance that with whatever happens this week, there might not be more than one game between teams that really like have to beat each other, like a Seattle Rams game potentially, or something involving the Falcons. Like that may or may not come to fruition. So my guess that means nothing is Cincinnati-Pittsburgh, especially if the Bengals beat Denver, where they're still alive, Burrow, Chase going for records, Chase going for the Triple Crown in receiving, and you know whether it's for pride or some playoff life, what have you, at a Steelers team that's playoff bound and always interesting. I mean, the Steelers are no strangers to island games. And then also, one little thing I thought that I just sort of noticed today on the schedule involves Tampa Bay. And if Tampa Bay wins its game against Carolina, they have two potential paths to the playoffs. One would be the NFC South, in which they would need Atlanta to lose a game in their following two. Tampa has to make a game up from the Falcons. And the other, they still have a chance to get in through a wild card through Washington. Washington has to win again, and Atlanta plays Washington. So I think if the Bucs win, Atlanta and Washington, they'd still be alive going into week 18, and that game Sunday night would tell us how. So I could see Washington being a consideration for Saturday night at Dallas. I mean, Dallas is also on nighttime all the time. Their season is over. By the way, CeeDee Lamb's season is over as well. They made that announcement. But that's a great rivalry, huge markets. So that's my wild guess, which, you know, is before much of the Week 17 schedule. I reserve the right to change it. But I do think those games make sense for Saturday. Let's go to Mark here. Hi, Mark.
How you doing?
Okay.
I was watching the MVP race all season long and just kind of noticed, you know, obviously
they look and say Josh Allen has to do everything, which, again, I've watched the Bills all season long as a Bills fan, and that's not true. But I look at Baltimore and Lamar, and he's an otherworldly talent. Except if Derrick Henry doesn't rush for 100 yards, Lamar's passing goes up, and his record-setting like passing percentage plummets.
How do you mean? Like, is that you saying that's happened this year, game to game, or it would happen?
It has happened. When he has to pass a ton because Henry's not running well, his passing percentage plummets. And so I always say to myself, well, you had to lead the team when your best player wasn't available or wasn't doing well.
I guess you'd have to show me that. Can you think of an example of that? I mean, I know Henry hasn't smashed every week, but...
Yeah, no, I can't remember. Henry had like 78 yards, and Lamar had to throw... I can't remember if it was the first Cincinnati game or second Cincinnati game.
Okay.
Lamar had to throw 46 times, but he was not... incredible, like it wasn't like 40 for 46. It was, you know, it was a vast difference.
Well, that would be amazing, but
yeah, he had the lead when he had to lead that team on those occasions when Henry wasn't doing well. They might have still won, but it always wasn't Lamar doing the action.
You know, this is a little bit of a strained argument for me, but you might be right. You know, aligned with how voters are looking at it. The first game in Cincinnati, Henry went. They won both games against Cincinnati, and both were shootouts. Henry went 15 for 92 and a touchdown. And if I remember right, he had a big run in overtime. Cincinnati missed a field goal, and then Henry busted one, and then the Ravens kicked a chip shot to win. So that would be a game like you're talking about where Henry didn't get off on the ground. Jackson went for 348, four touchdowns, no picks. Like... maybe you're making a completion percentage point here, but I don't think you're making really like a real life argument. Like that is not an example of a game, if that's the one you want, but it is one like you're describing where Henry did not smash, like that Lamar Jackson did not suffer. Thanks, Mark. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off. The Sabres home to Chicago tonight. Look for more of your calls after a break, and then Sal at 5. This is Football Friday on WGR. Welcome back, Football Friday, with a hockey game at the end of it. And the Bandits open tomorrow night at home, first home game of the season against Rochester. Great sports weekend here in Western New York, plus on TV. Maybe underrated, like the bowl games, whatever. At least it's watchable, you know, just there's a football game on a weekday morning. Great. The World Juniors is a pretty good watch. Hockey. I watched some of Canada-Finland last night. I want to bring up Hellenius, the Sabres' first-round pick, to Paul. I thought he was pretty good for Finland in that game. So you've got that. NBA. I ended up watching parts of two NBA games on Christmas. Used to be the brand, and it still is, but NFL stepped all over it. But Sixers-Celtics and then Lakers-Warriors. A lot to pick for soccer. Premier League does it right. They're putting games on like every day around the holidays. That's cool. Here's Brian next. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Mike. So you talked about the Chiefs earlier. And to me, I mean, they've gotten a lot of credit, of course, for their uptick in offense here the last two games. To me, I watched both of the games. They play the same way they've played all year. It's a death by a thousand paper cut style. I mean, at this point, DeAndre Hopkins is a tight end. I mean, he runs like tight end routes. Isaiah Pacheco was going to take back the backfield when he came back, and that hasn't happened. It's still Kareem Hunt a lot, 3 to 4 yards a carry, just bashing into the middle of the line. I think Xavier Worthy, they've made him into a full-time gadget player. I mean, he's playing in the slot a lot now, and against the Texans, 8 out of 11 targets was out of the slot. He's getting nothing but bubble screens and pop routes and end-arounds. But that's become a little bit more a part of their offense, emphasis-wise. And I think with Marquise Brown, that's just pushed like Noah Gray and Justin Watson down a peg. It may be their only kind of explosive play. I mean, I think you got Travis Gutt has an obvious beer belly now, and he still is not covered off the line and kind of wanders into the secondary. At this point, he's jogging into the secondary. You just watch his plays. If he gets a free release, he turns around, it's 4 to 5 yards every time. So I think it all revolves around the mastery of Pat Mahomes, obviously, and he's just mastered this death by a thousand paper cut style. I'm watching the 2001, 2003, 2004 Patriots again. They just maintain the ball forever. And if you get sucked into that game where you can't score on them, then you just get it's like Alabama 10 years ago. It's just an anaconda that just squeezes the life out of you. They rip time of possession. And I think that's the key. So in the past, it was you better keep up with Mahomes scoring the ball. And now, to me, it's like the opposite. You got to score and get them out of that. Because if they play that style, it's just a long day for you, man. It's Juju Smith-Schuster for 4 yards. And, that didn't really hurt me, but then it's Worthy for five. So it's a long way around of saying, like, they have just increased their efficiency to just a high level. I mean, that play that Mahomes, that two-point conversion, and he drifts backwards against the Steelers, and he's almost running out of bounds, and then he just floats like a rainbow ball that gets picked in the end zone. To me, that's not peak athletic Mahomes from years ago. I don't think Mahomes used to make that play, but they get away with it now because now everything is short. Everything is tiny and dinky.
Okay.
And I don't...
Sorry. Thanks, Brian. Okay. We'll see, right? I mean, they're not playing weaker competition in Houston and Pittsburgh than they were playing when they went to the gun with Carolina and, had the Raiders take them to the limit either. I think the only thing I really say different is the Worthy piece. What was Rashee Rice either? Like that's threatening. It's not over the top. Maybe it'll end up there, but that timing has never looked good this year with Mahomes and Worthy. But what happened with Rice last year was it evolved, it grew, and then by the playoffs, he was pretty tough. And I think the same kind of thing, I mean, he 8 for 79 and 1 on 9 targets is to be respected against the Steelers this week. So the scary thing, I was talking about them earlier, I think that's what Brian's responding to. I think the bye week, they have won that now, as you know. And so it's 2 weeks in the lab to figure out new stuff for teams that are very used to you and have been gunning for you for years. And we'll see, like the Chiefs and the Bills, they wouldn't be big favorites or anything. They would be favored at home against anybody, I would expect, but not big favorites. But they're going to be in close games probably, and you're going to have to handle whatever they come up with here, having had the luxury of 2 weeks off to draw up new looks. That, I think, is what might be the scariest. The Bills know they can play with them and beat them. But, man, that one seed would have been nice. The rest, but also, I mean, Kansas City is just the team that would benefit from that in multiple ways because their coach is brilliant at that stuff and the quarterback, too. And they've got the injuries to have to recover from. And then, of course, it's one less game for them to play. And I've never really been too worried about Kansas City all season, but I'm getting to that point because I think this affords them a really big edge. Thanks again, Brian. Sal next. It's Football Friday on WGR.